Words on Water. This episode is brought to you by Adage Water Technologies. Adage specializes in the design, development, fabrication, and supply of water treatment solutions, specialty medias, legacy, and innovative technologies that remove a wide range of contaminants from water. They have extensive experience in the removal of arsenic, iron, manganese, hydrogen sulfide, fluoride, nitrate, and uranium from water, and have sold hundreds of water systems ranging from 5 gallons per minute to over 20 million gallons per day in North America and locations throughout the world. Visit them online at adagetech.com.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host. Very excited to have two guests on this episode today from Adage Water Technologies. I have Ronit Orlitsky, the Director of Business Development and Innovation, and I have Richard Cavanero, Director of Corporate Marketing and Communications. How are you both doing today?
Excellent, thanks. We're very excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. We're both very excited, despite a gray sky outside.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll just think about water and technology, and that'll be exciting enough, right? Speaking of that, I think it's a really exciting time to be working in water, especially because of everything happening with technology and innovation and this digital age that we're in. And I just kind of want to hear from you about if you agree with that idea that it's an exciting time to be working in water and why it's exciting.
Absolutely. It's a super exciting time right now to be in the water treatment industry. You know, water is so fascinating, from its chemistry to its vital role for all living organisms here on Earth. So it's really cool to be part of something that makes a difference in the world. Every day, we're constantly looking and finding ways to make a difference in society. And that absolutely makes the life of water treatment professionals so interesting and meaningful. It's an exciting time right now. You know, access to fresh water is a necessity. And then we're also at this really neat nexus of sustainability, regulation, innovation, and efficiency right now. So there are tons of municipalities and industrial companies around the world, not just here in the US, who are looking for ways to make their jobs easier and more efficient. And this is spurring a lot of innovation right now in the marketplace, which is, it's awesome to see. You know, the water treatment industry has been traditionally pretty conservative and cautious to accept new technologies in the market. But luckily, a lot of these innovations are addressing shortcomings many municipalities and industrial companies are experiencing while treating water. And, you know, an example of that is the renewal and replacement of existing infrastructure. As we've seen in other tech industries, efficiency is becoming a key part of life. And as cliche as it may sound, the phrase work smarter, not harder is becoming the mantra in all aspects of life. Many of these innovations in the water industry are addressing this concept through technology and are addressing different kinds of efficiency as well, like energy efficiency, treatment efficiency, and operator efficiency. And then on the regulatory side of things, we're seeing this increase of interest in treating PFOS and PFOA, and then also manganese removal, which has recently now linked with developmental issues in children, and then also has those aesthetic issues, you know, when you turn on the sink and black water comes out and stains all the coffee pots and your bathtub and your clothes.
I think that this is a great example of why it's so fascinating, because PFOS and PFOA are emerging contaminants and everyone is concerned about it. But manganese, if you ask, you still, when you ask water professionals today, many of them are not aware that manganese is added to CCL4, to the contaminant list. And this is exactly why it's fascinating, because it's like a naive aesthetic concern contaminant, But hey, science found that, discovered that it's actually not safe for the development of children.
And in Canada, too, it's really kind of cool because they already adopted this new regulatory issue with manganese. So they changed it from a secondary treatment goal to now a primary treatment goal in Canada.
And so it's definitely a bubbly market.
Absolutely.
It's like this double-edged sword of science right now, where it's allowing us to do all this incredible treatment and develop all this technology to really take care of our water better and so forth. But then it's also revealing all of this these things that were previously undetectable or really unknown. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword, right?
Absolutely.
Right, there is even some criticism in the market that the better the analytical methods are, we get into regulatory rules that determine that we shouldn't exceed some contaminants at the level of parts per trillion, not only parts per billion. And if it's if you're able to detect it, then maybe you should treat it. If you treat it, you need cost-effective technology, which is not always available. And I think that's exactly the story of chromium 6.
Absolutely.
It is well known that it's harmful, but there isn't still a cost-effective solution. Actually, we're working on it, by the way. We have first installation in Texas. The reason that it's not regulated currently, even in California, is because there is some understanding that we need to find cost-effective solution first before we force anyone to adhere to a new regulation.
And just because something is detectable, at what level is it actually pose a harm or a threat to human health also? Just because it's there doesn't mean it's necessarily going to have a negative health impact. And there's that whole side of the health science where a lot of it's not known for these different contaminants, right? And we've got to advance the science on that front to be able to know, well, what level should we be treating and what level should we be concerned about?
Absolutely. You know, as Ronit mentioned, as analytical technology is becoming more precise, we don't know exactly what is inside the water 100% of the time. And with pharmaceuticals and hormones and all of those things that
that are unknown.
Yeah. And we don't know exactly what's in there. So the water treatment industry is constantly evolving. And that's another thing that really makes it exciting.
Yeah. And one more thing, we must give credit to regulators such as the EPA. It takes them years and years before they move a contaminant from the candidate list of contaminant to actually being regulated, because they do exactly what you mentioned before, Travis. They do go through a tedious process of proving or confirming that indeed there is a health concern with this contaminant.
Yeah.
So this work is being done. But I think that the bottom line is that science teaches to dare, to think, to consider new facts that we're becoming aware of. And we cannot ignore it. We just need to find a way to take these discoveries and innovation and do a very thorough vetting process before we actually use them or develop technologies to cope with them, with these findings.
And people always say that the water industry is not a creative industry. You know, it's not like marketing.
No way.
And
who says it?
It's not like, you know, poetry and literature and all that kind of stuff. But there is a lot of creativity here. There's a constant evolution of innovative technologies.
Come on, every day when we come to the office and we get water quality from a water utility, it's like being a doctor, you know, looking at lab results of a patient.
Yeah.
So you must be creative to find a cost-effective solution. I'm offended from your comment.
I think people, some people don't think that engineers and scientists are necessarily creative people, but they're problem solvers and they're investigators, and so you have to have a really good degree of creativity to have
Maybe
those
don't
types of roles.
Express it, but you must be creative if you're a scientist.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. You've brought up some amazing topics, some really kind of cutting edge topics, pressing issues. Just briefly, what is Adage what's your role? What's your focus then on this front that makes you so informed about all this?
First of all, we're creative.
Yeah.
We're constantly adding new processes, new technologies to our portfolio that really set us apart from other companies in the industry. We're not a one-size-fits-all kind of company. As Ronit mentioned, we're like doctors. We take the water quality that comes to us and we, for lack of a better word, prescribe what we think is the best process for these companies or for these municipalities. And we're constantly evolving. We're constantly changing. And that's setting us apart from others in this industry.
Some community or municipality utility will come to you and say, "Hey, here's what's in our water, and what kind of treatment technology, what processes do you think we should be putting in here to deal with this?"
Exactly, and if I may, I would like to mention the fact that we have extensive IP assets, which are our understanding and knowledge of the chemistry of water, and mainly in situations that are not that trivial, when you have multi-contaminant situation in the water, whether it's groundwater or industrial water, or maybe effluent of a previous of another process. So the IP that is accumulated at AdEdge is very impressive. We do have knowledge, and it matters. And I think that, Richard, once we did the math about how many years of knowledge we have combined here, and we got to like 400 years of experience.
Incredible.
So it's a fossil IP.
And what's really from a company's perspective as well, we're lucky to have leaders on our management team who are always looking for what's next. What's the next innovation in the industry? And
they encourage us.
And exactly, they encourage us to go out there and find that.
And I highly recommend to take a look at our treatment matrix, which is really a proof of our abilities. We created a matrix of different contaminants and how they can be treated with different processes. And it's not trivial. It's an actual matrix, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you know, we're constantly adding new contaminants to it. We're adding new processes to it. We call it our 2020 matrix right now, because at this moment we currently have 20 different processes that remove 20 different contaminants from drinking water.
Wow.
And industrial process water. So that matrix is kind of our first line of defense.
Yeah.
To the marketplace saying, "Hey, look what we can treat."
Can I ask you guys about the family of PFCs? Because it's such a big public issue right now. PFOA, PFAS, Gen X, and it's just really exploded the past couple years. And are you able to tell me anything simply about the best way to remove that stuff from drinking water?
Huh, that's a terrific question. Because that's what the market is busy doing right now, figure out what's the best treatment approach. And believe it or not, surprise, surprise, it's complicated, because it really depends on the type of the PFC and the best way to treat it. So basically, we have the approach of activated carbon, which is an adsorptive method, but we also have an option to treat it with ion exchange. And as far as about 2 years ago, I was attending the small water systems
yeah, workshop with the EPA.
Thank you. Uh-huh. I'm aging here, Travis. They mentioned, they did already a study to compare between different treatment approaches. And even among with GAC, with activated carbon, there are different types of GAC that are good fit for different type of water quality that is contaminated with PFCs. The news that we bring to the market is that we are introducing a very unique resin, ion exchange resin, to be used as an adsorptive media to remove PFCs. And it's big news because usually Ion Exchange is considered like the bad kid in the neighborhood nowadays because it's associated with regeneration of the Ion Exchange resin, which generates a very concentrated waste stream, brine. And if you introduce it as one-time use resin and in the process, you also prove that it's over a period of 10, 20 years, it's more cost effective than activated carbon, then you have a winning solution for treatment of PFCs.
And I'm going to sound like the marketing guy for a second. Yeah. And what's special about us too is that we are able to address multiple contaminants through multiple processes. So let's say there are PFOA in the water and there is arsenic in the water. We're able to, through our treatment matrix, through the processes and technologies that we have here, address both of those issues in the drinking water and like create a fully integrated package system from start to finish for these communities. So, you know, chem feed, backwash recycle systems, a PLC, we're able to do that whole entire packaged unit. Yeah. And that's what kind of sets us apart from other companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point because, for example, in some sites for PFOS, PFOA, we may realize that based on the water quality, instead of ion exchange resin, carbon could be a better fit. So we can also provide a carbon solution for it.
I used to work at EPA in the water office for 6 years. And so I've very immersed in these issues. And like I said, could go on and dig into it for a while. One of the other topics I wanted to talk to you about is desalination. It's used a lot more internationally, but seems to be creeping into the U.S. a little bit, especially for some of like the brackish aquifers and so forth. What's from your perspective? What's going on with desalination? What are the challenges? How's the what are the barriers? And what's the landscape look like?
Well, Travis, we're going to not agree over something today.
Okay.
it's not how do you say it, creeping into the U.S.?
Yeah.
Actually, here. Seriously, I'm being arrogant, but I learned it myself.
No, you're more of an expert than I am. So that's fine. Yeah, interesting.
But we're
to hear.
Both good people.
That's right. Yeah, of course. so it's here and it's really taking hold and being used more widely, huh?
I believe so. I mean, Richard and I spoke about it that. Even the use of desalination, the word desalination, it's a little bit challenging, right, Richard?
It is, definitely. There's this concept or this perception in the market that, and maybe mostly a public perception, that desalination is only for seawater treatment. You look at the Middle East and they are constantly taking salts out of water. And so there's that perception of desalination, seawater. But then there's that whole side of brackish water too, inland desalination, that also takes place.
Right, correct. So desalination is describing the process of removing salt from water. But actually any other minerals and contaminants can be removed by desalination, which is usually we're talking desalination, we think about reverse osmosis or any other membranal technology. Even nanofiltration, but there are also technologies that are based on thermal desalination. And these two are the most common approaches for desalination, for removal of salts from water. Obviously, membranal technologies is more common. And with time, what we see, and we're talking about, I think, in the 60s, before Richard was born, we already started to see reverse osmosis technologies, but with time, both the cost, the operational cost, and the science behind the membranes is excelling. In a way, what I heard from people that are heavily involved in desalination, that we have reached or almost at the peak of the technology for membranes. And you can see that the competition between different manufacturers, it's a little bit vague because the technology works so well. So the place to differentiate between different reverse osmosis processes is optimization of the process with existing membranes. Yes, and as Richard mentioned, it's relevant because we can use it for brackish water and inland desalination, which then presents a new challenge, which is the concentrate management.
Definitely. And, you know, a lot of these communities are looking for places to get rid of the concentrate, and it's becoming an environmental issue. It's becoming an issue of, hey, I don't want to dump more salt into the sea and, you know, potentially destroy ecosystems,
right,
and stuff like that. And then inland too, it's like, where do you dump the concentrate? How is that going to affect the environment? What's going to happen with that?
Huh? Right. What are some of the things that are happening out there? How are they, what are ways people get rid of it?
Well, first of all, with seawater, there's not any motivation to increase recovery or reduce the concentrate volume, because you, even if you have 55% or 50% recovery rate, you just dump the concentrate back to the ocean.
Okay.
So there we don't have motivation to improve the process. The motivation with seawater desalination is low operational cost overall. Right. But as you both guys said, brackish water, we need to find a way to treat the concentrate. And the big new buzzword is concentrate management. So, and you probably heard the word ZLD, zero liquid discharge,
mm-hmm.
or MLD, minimal liquid discharge. So everybody's talking about it. The truth is that there isn't a really a great solution yet.
Yet.
So evaporation could be a solution, but it's a very expensive due to high power consumption. Evaporation lagoons need extensive space, which is irrelevant in urban areas, and it's a very slow process. There is chemical treatment of concentrate in order to precipitate the salts, which is also, it consumes a lot of chemicals. So there are, I don't know if you heard, but in El Paso, they build a whole facility to recover the minerals and some rare earth minerals from treated wastewater. So they take the wastewater effluent and they treat it in a plant aimed at treating this effluent by recovering the precious compounds. It's a very interesting process. It's still a bit challenging because you need to have a very good business model in order to make these efforts cost-effective and actually economically feasible. But this is a fantastic example of how scientists put together effort in order to try to resolve this problem.
Sounds like scientists and engineers being creative again. So,
yeah, oh my God,
how dare they? Very, very interesting. I want to again, we could talk a long time about this in particular, but I want to talk about something that you all are also involved in that I want to hear about, and that's the process of transferring a technology to the market. So some technology is developed, it's made viable, it's commercially viable. How do you take a technology then and get it out there?
Yeah, so water technology implementation, it takes time. And there is a generally a risk averse community and strict regulations about it.
Yeah.
So technology transfer involves all aspects of the sales, marketing, engineering process. You have the marketing and business development. You have engineering. You have sales. You have to do a commercial feasibility. We call that here stage gate, and then a piloting as well.
And there is a community,
absolutely,
local regulators.
So it's this really cool partnership between a company such as ours and the local community and the regulators engineers, and that's what really makes a technology transfer exciting for us. And we have a really cool new biological technology called pneumonia that we're commercializing right now. And we are commercializing it from the EPA. So back in 2002, when the EPA lowered the MCL of arsenic to 10 parts per billion, we were founded around the same time. And the EPA conducted demonstration projects for 49 sites around the United States to evaluate best available technologies for the removal of arsenic.
Hmm.
So many of these companies involved in the program demonstrated a multitude of technologies for arsenic reduction: reverse osmosis, activated alumina, adsorption, ion exchange, etc. And then over the course of the program, we were super lucky to participate in 12 projects. And during the arsenic demonstration program, we demonstrated two processes, the absorption process and oxidation filtration. So our absorption process, it uses bayoxide E33, a granular ferric oxide, to reduce arsenic below the MCL. Usually it goes to like non-detectable levels, which is pretty exciting.
Depends on the design.
Exactly. And then the second process that we used during the arsenic demonstration program was using our 8026 media, which is a oxidation filtration media for the co-contaminant removal of arsenic, iron, and manganese.
And this was the
first time that this has ever been demonstrated into the marketplace. And our CTO here designed and engineered this process to reduce those contaminants below the maximum contaminant levels and often to non-detectable levels.
So I want to emphasize that it was a discovery process. Maybe we used tools that were existing, media, but it was a discovery process of treating different water qualities. Each site, I think, was different water quality.
Each site was a different water quality, flow rate.
How do you take the same tools and match them to optimize them to different sites?
Well, playing off of that, and kind of the last question, and this is something I know about from my time at EPA and actually the Water Environment Federation, where I work, is now helping to coordinate kind of the national network of these water technology innovation clusters. And I know that you have some involvement in one of these clusters. And could you just talk about how they work and why they're valuable, what the benefits are? What is a water technology innovation cluster?
So the clusters are regional organizations. These are groups of people from the private, public, academic sectors that share information and resources in order to trigger economic development in the water industry.
And so one of these technologies that we're really sharing information about right now in our water cluster, which is basically the whole entire Southeast, is this high recovery RO technology, the Adage Rotech technology, that we're able to get recovery rates up to 95% in this.
Wow.
Right. Yeah, so a group like a cluster, a water cluster, gives us the stage to present this technology and pilot it.
Absolutely. And one really cool project that we're working on with a water cluster right now is we were contacted by Georgia State University, their education department, and they're creating a virtual reality program for middle school STEM students to teach them about all different career paths in the water treatment industry. It's really cool.
Yeah, they found out. It's very interesting because it's the School of Education, so theoretically, they could ask for a grant to develop curriculum for any topic, Chinese language, philosophy. But for some reason, the person that was leading it was attending a water cluster meeting, and he met with Adage, And we helped him, I think, come to the idea that there are STEM students that are not even aware of how they can implement the knowledge that they acquire. And I think, Richard, that it's a good time to mention the concern about the availability or lack of water operators in the future.
Definitely.
We need to raise the next generation.
Definitely. And so this is a really neat project to, you know, in the water treatment industry, the generation that's in it for the most part right now is going to be retiring in the next 10 to 15 years. So people who are millennials and Gen Z are starting to come up into the industry, and this is a really great opportunity to show them, hey, these are all the careers that you can do in the industry. You can be an operator, you can be in design and engineering, marketing, for example.
And, which reminds me, I had a discussion with a veteran of the water industry. He's the gentleman, his name is Abraham Tene. He's in Israel, and he was the person behind at least four of the seawater desalination plants in Israel. And we had an argument once whether water technology is low-tech or high-tech.
Oh, boy. And
people think that it's low-tech, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's pipes and screws and valves. But then we realized, which wasn't as much fun because we stopped arguing, we agreed that actually it's very high-tech.
Absolutely.
Not only because it involves so much science, but every tools that we use in order to optimize or design a system is high-tech technology. The valves are so accurately manufactured, and the CAD drawings and the analytical tools, it's 100% high-tech. Absolutely. And kids need to know it.
Yeah, well, and it's projects like the virtual reality program. Projects like our innovations, like our high-recovery RO system. It's innovations like our biological technologies that really allow us to connect to this next generation of people coming into the industry who are constantly looking for the next great thing.
Right,
technology that's constantly evolving. You know, I've been having cell phones for 10, 15 years now, and from where it started to today is totally different. And it's kind of like that in the water treatment industry to an extent. You know, there are these conventional technologies that are out there, but then there's this innovation pushing through right now that's really challenging the status quo in the industry, and it's very exciting, and it allows us to connect to these folks and also demonstrate, in my opinion, the most important core value that we have as an organization, and that's our passion for clean water.
Right. And also, the younger generation, you know, I was listening to you when you were talking about connecting to the younger generation. By the way, you belong to the younger generation.
I do. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. No, don't apologize.
To be the oldest guy in the room. Yeah. But they all really care about the environment.
Yes.
And about being socially responsible.
Yes.
And when you look at a company like Adage, we set a goal to focus on high recovery and low waste technologies. And that's exactly what a biological treatment is, right? We use natural resources, bacteria, in order to treat water. It's exactly with the ultra high recovery flow reverse osmosis technology. We reduce the concentrate by 60%. Do you know how much easier and more cost effective is to reach to zero liquid discharge when the volume of the concentrate is so much lower? We have the H2Zero, which is a system that we developed in order to recycle backwash water, and we can reach to recoveries of
99.8%.
8.7%.
Tree hugger, I'm really excited about all this sustainability and environmental consciousness that's going into the industry right now.
That's so. I appreciate that you label yourself a tree hugger, because I label my kids call me a tree hugger, and I say that's right. I'm proud of that.
I know.
Me too.
Yeah. And just this whole issue, I'm glad you guys raised it about the workforce. It's out there. It's very well documented. The Brookings Institution put out a phenomenal report about there's like over 200 types of jobs, types of careers in the water sector, the incredible need for people to come in, how technology is changing the skill sets and the types of jobs. So that's all out there. I'm fascinated by this project to use virtual reality to show some of these water sector jobs. I really want to learn more about that offline. But yeah, good stuff. I appreciate this conversation today. We hit on a bunch of different topics, but really fascinating and engaging. So I appreciate the time.
No, thank you.
Thank you very much, Travis.
Words on Water.